Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist.
We are thrilled to have in the studio two wonderful podcasters as well as co-authors. Maybe you know them from their podcast By the Book. Maybe you've heard about their book, How to Be Fine, What We Learn from Living by the Rules of 50 Self-Help Books. And if you like self-help books, great topics to talk about, because I think all of us, we look in there and say, does this stuff work? What if I really follow to the letter of the law? Guess what? They did that. And also, you can hear them on the latest show for Romance Road Test. Again, trying out different kinds of advice, seeing what the results are. Please welcome to the microphones, we have Kristen Meinzer and Jolenta Greenberg.
Hello.
Woo-hoo. Hi. Welcome.
I'm so excited to be here.
Oh, thank you for
happy to have
by.
You.
We feel like we should sing, but we're not gonna.
That's fine. You know,
no pressure.
Let's look.
Jolenta is such a good singer, by the way. She is.
Are you?
I just can't come up with a song from our youth. And then make podcasting lyrics about
Wait,
it on the fly. That's,
Jolenta, that's you got a you got some pipes?
No.
Oh.
She's being modest. She has a beautiful voice.
Okay. What's your karaoke song? What's like your number one karaoke? What's your go-to?
Oh, that's hard. I'm always good to do 9 to 5 because people get impressed if you can keep up with all of like the fast lyrics, which I usually can, depending on my level of inebriation.
Okay. Yeah.
Those are chops right there.
It's the end of the world. As we know it, for the other fast lyrics spitting too.
Yes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Yeah. TikTok is hard. Also, by Kesha.
Oh yeah.
TikTok does go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What about you, Kristen? Do you have a go to?
Absolutely. My go to is always "Raspberry Beret" by my hometown hero, Prince. He's from my hometown, Minneapolis.
Okay.
And,
shout out.
One thing I really like about that song is you can kind of talk half of it instead of singing.
Yeah. Sure.
And since I'm not a good singer, I can just talk it through.
Love to hear
that. I was working part time at the Five and Dime. My boss was Mr. McGee. Did you hear that?
Wow.
Yeah, see?
Whoa.
Yeah.
Expert see? Singer.
Wow. Dripped out in swag. Oh, wait. So where are you both coming to us from? Are you in Minneapolis or what cities are we in collectively right now?
We are both in Brooklyn.
Okay.
Not too far apart from each other, but in our respective homes.
Okay. Fantastic.
Love it. Shout out Brooklyn.
Man, we've had yesterday or on Friday's episode, too. We had some people from the 718 checking in.
Brooklyn in the house.
Mm-hmm. And also Becca Rumpel. We're a national, international podcast, obviously. But
we're out here.
Oh, and so tell us a little bit about your newest show. Because like as someone who I used to read a lot of self-help books like in college because, you know, I thought that would make up for never going to therapy. Turns out therapy is more effective than self-help books in most instances. Mm. But when I saw the premise of this, I'm like, okay, what I like you. I'm like, you're in my similar mindset of like, let's test the advice. Let's see what is actionable. Give us a little bit of a taste of what's going on with the new show.
Yeah. So Romance Road Test, rather than reading full self-help books, cover to cover, 450 pages of how to improve your life, we just snack on short articles, TikTok videos, YouTube videos, and so on that are dispensing relationship hacks, things that we find in women's magazines and so on, and we apply them to our relationship. So everything from do something terrifying together to assemble flat pack furniture to get closer with your partner, introduce each other to your hobbies, read smut to each other.
Yeah.
We do all of the things.
Sex every day for a week.
Yes, right. All of that.
I saw grooming as well, grooming each other.
Yeah, grooming each other.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Picking the nits.
We do all that so
hair.
You don't have to. And then you get to eavesdrop on it because it's kind of an audio reality show. So we tape ourselves laughing, crying, and fighting through every one of these hacks.
Oh, that's amazing.
Great.
Is there one, you've typically, this is kind of like the stuff you focused on was like taking knowledge or self-help things or relationship advice. What's been like the most surprising thing that you're like, this will never work. And you're like, oh, they were right about that.
Damn, that really worked.
I mean, I don't want to speak for you, Kristen, but I'm going to. But I would say trying something terrifying together was a surprising thrill, shall I say. Like, it was definitely something I went into reluctantly and was like, this will not work. But like, you know, when your nerves are up, like your endorphins are up, and then you guys are like bonded and like jittery together, and it's like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It supposedly simulates a lot of the same feelings you have when you're first falling in love with someone. The uncertainty, the where do we stand? We're not on firm ground. What's happening here?
Right.
And then also the shared trauma of surviving that terrifying thing.
Right.
Just the trauma bond afterwards.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, like
and
that
was one of the only hacks that we did that both Jolenta and her partner and I and my partner, it was one of the only ones that we all universally felt was great.
What? And so, and that's relative, right? Because for me, something terrifying would be to, you know, go to a Lululemon opening.
Sounds terrifying too.
What are the parameters? Like if someone who's listening right now says, what's the sort of sliding scale to say this is terrifying, this is adequately terrifying to improve my relationship?
That was gonna be my question. What is the terrifying thing?
Yeah.
For us, it was just like what we could agree on as a couple. Like, because, the stuff that terrifies you may not necessarily terrify your partner, but you gotta find like a bit of a middle ground.
Right.
And like, it doesn't have to be too extreme as long as it makes both of you a little hesitant.
Right. Like go to like a mattress store and cut off the tags. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just thrill seeking. Never know.
The only place
where we
illegal.
End up. This is apparently a federal offense.
Yeah.
Do you mind if I ask what you both did respectively as your terrifying events?
Yeah. So my husband and I did something that on the outside probably just looked cute, but on the inside was so scream inducing that half of the audio from that episode is just me screaming the whole time. It was us riding a tandem bicycle together. And I'm literally screaming at the top of my lungs through half this episode. And Dean, when he gets very tense, he just goes silent. So it's just him saying nothing and me screaming the whole time.
Wait, so are you not comfortable on a bike? What made it terrifying? The idea that the two of you have to, in tandem, keep the bike upright?
Well, I am not a super confident bike rider in the city. Like, I can ride a bike, like, maybe on the beach, but I've been in bike accidents. I've been hit by bikes before. I've been injured by bikes. And meanwhile, my husband, he's just a little bit too much of a thrill seeker on bikes. And just a few weeks before we did this, he was in the ER because he had a mountain biking accident. So the last thing I want to do is get on a bike with somebody who's so reckless that he gets into mountain biking accidents. And the last thing he wants to do is get on a bike with somebody who's too scared to ride a bike.
Right. Oh, perfect.
And, and so it was terrifying for both of us.
Okay. What about you, Jolenta?
I mean, mine was like very heteronormative, but my husband and I drove us to the beach. And normally, even though we're both like very good drivers, he's the one that tends to drive, especially in the city. I'm like, I'll drive out of the city, no problem. But he tends to do the city driving. And so just him sort of giving up that control and like letting me have it and me sort of getting my sea legs or like my city driving legs again was definitely terrifying. Like I tend to be like maybe a little overly cautious, which will get you like honked at and like, you know, there was lots of yelling. But in the end, we couldn't believe we made it. And like, we were definitely on a high.
Nice. And I think, actually, the more I ask, I'm like, wait, the real exercise here, I think, for somebody trying to figure out what is a good activity is more to be open enough with yourself to be like, what are my vulnerabilities, actually? Because those will probably lead to more trying activities that will only enrich the relationship, for sure.
What is something from your search history?
Ooh, search history right now. Gosh. I have been looking into something called empathic discipline, which is an approach to creating stronger teacher-student trust and relationships with the goal of decreasing racial disparities in school discipline, like suspensions, expulsions, detentions, things like that. And there's some really interesting research done by an amazing psychologist named Jason Okonofua, who finds that, and the research found that when you train teachers to use empathic approaches to students, when you train teachers to really focus on building trusting relationships and avoiding labeling students and really thinking about how important the teacher-student relationship is to helping students' success, what happens is suspensions drop, and specifically racial disparities in suspensions decrease as well. So it's like this really interesting approach to decreasing bias that doesn't actually target bias. So it's like kind of this ninja, or maybe more like judo. It's like this move of getting at the consequences of bias without actually trying to tackle the bias itself. So I've been researching that.
So just focusing on building empathy, like with teachers having empathy with their students across the board.
And the idea that like just by having a an actual relationship, a student will probably be like, oh yeah, I respect you because I trust you. So if you're telling me that, I'm less likely to act out versus me being like, oh, here comes this fucking asshole who just wants to say I'm a bad influence all the time.
That's exactly it. So what this researcher found was that a lot of like bias interventions, think of it as this one-way street, which is like the teacher expressing bias toward the student. But what Jason Okonofua found, Dr. Okonofua, is that it's actually like an interactive experience. So exactly as you point out, Miles, like the teacher is maybe having certain stereotypes about students and the student senses that. And they are primed to act out because they don't trust the teacher and they're expecting to be treated in a particular way. And so that might even create them to act out more and then fulfill the teacher's stereotype, which just creates this like endless.
And then the teacher's like, and I was right about them. Right.
Exactly.
And then on we go. Right. For sure.
You nailed it. Yeah. So this approach is really designed to interrupt that bad cycle and help teachers really understand how important it is for the student to feel respected and for the teacher to respect the students and to create that bond so that exactly like when a problem arises, the student, like, as you point out, is like, oh, okay, maybe this teacher's right. Maybe I do need to kind of shift things around. And I know that they respect me. And so it creates the foundation for a relationship that then causes students to feel more respected and behave better.
Right. And it seems like it's just something really good teachers naturally do. You know, like I think of like teachers I've had teachers who have like written me off and I'm like, and I hated being in their classroom because they're going to be like the second I have one teacher who like if anybody laughed at any time, she'd be like, Miles, what are you doing? Or something, because she thought I was distracting the class. I'm like, dude, I don't even sit on that side of the classroom. What the fuck are you talking about? And it was always very tense. And then I had other teachers who knew I could be disruptive, but like would come at me and say like, hey, look, I know you get excited. You want to talk to your friends, but like, just help me out and just kind of like cool it when you do it. And that approach I was always more respectful with those teachers who were like, hey, I get it. You know, like, I get you, but like, please shut the fuck up. And I was like, okay, cool. Versus like, here he goes. The right. loud kid again, throwing up gang signs, ruining our class picture. And I'm like, get back in your Thunderbird already, Elise.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that was super interesting to me about this research was that when the psychologist recruited teachers for this study, he didn't actually tell them that they were doing, that he was like doing an intervention with them. Mm-hmm. What he told them was they were being recruited to kind of reflect and review best practices in teaching.
Right.
And review. And so they were given this material that talked about how important trusting relationships are and how important it is to not label a student or assume that the teacher knows why a student is behaving that way, and to instead look for maybe situational reasons that a student is behaving that way, rather than fix it to like some kind of essential aspect of that student. And so they were, they were told that they were just reviewing best practices, and then they reviewed things like how students felt when they felt respected and how that helped them learn. And yeah, I mean, the results were pretty spectacular in terms of actually like changing the dynamic.
It's wild how much we ask of our teachers too already, right? Like, because on top of, you know, the many teachers who listen to this show, again, thank you so much. I'll continue to retweet your wish lists. But the added sort of task of like, yeah, look, some kids are not supported at home and are going to come in here. And then also, we also need you to have these skills to be able to make sure that they can navigate life, because they're not going to be through this like chaotic sequence of like not trusting people in authority positions and what that turns into in adulthood. Just wild how much we ask. That's why thank a teacher when you see them, because that's why I'm so grateful, because I think of the teachers who actually tried to understand me rather than just kind of be like, this guy's a disruptive asshole. It was like, thank you. And that helped me be more interested in like school at the end of the day, rather than like feeling like I was going to a place where people were just going to be like, you're bad.
That's so dope, though, that the study found that the training, like, it is changeable. It's not a fixed problem. It's something where training teachers to, you know, just focus on this part of their relationships with students, it like makes an impact. Is that something that's like generalizable to healthcare and, you know, other places? Is empathic discipline kind of being adopted? Law enforcement, say? I don't know.
It's a really interesting question. I mean, I think if you zoom out a little bit, I think what this approach shows is that if you want to address people's biases, one thing that can work that we see in this education research is enhancing their other values, like boosting their commitment to values like trusting relationships and respect and mutual understanding and avoiding labeling. And so if you kind of boost and like amplify those values, then that can override these automatic responses that we might have toward one another. So it kind of like, yeah, it's almost, it's like, I don't know, like a vitamin, like some kind of steroid, like you give your other values steroids, and then it kind of like this metaphor is falling apart. Sorry.
No, it's okay. We're a pro steroids podcast.
Yeah, we're always have one very strongly.
We're both on cycles right now.
So you do a hit of Balco straight in your empathy zone.
Everyone is just completely juiced.
Yeah.
So, but no, it's true.
I love this study.
Sorry.
Not only my biceps got bigger, my heart was enlarged also.
The Grinch's heart only grew 3 sizes that day. That ain't shit, bro. Sorry. All right.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you mentioned policing because yes, there is also really interesting work done in policing that I talk about in my book, actually, that looks at like how you change police behavior, basically, like how you actually get police to behave in respectful, kind, humane ways, rather than just avoid like breaking the law. And right. avoid just like criminal right. behavior.
Right. Right. Right.
And that, yeah. And I think, you know, in that case, it's a lot about creating incentives. Like we talk about, you know, I was just at a meeting actually here in Minneapolis talking about improving police behavior and accountability. And everyone focuses primarily on accountability and correct punishment for right. you know, for failure.
We need more guardrails, kind of thing, right?
Exactly. And yeah. that's like really, it's totally important. I mean, it creates like a floor below which you cannot go in terms of bad behavior. But I think we miss something when we talk about this because culture is not just what you punish, but it's also what you reward.
Yeah.
And I think if we just talk about punishment without talking about what we're actually trying to reward and incentivize and like the kind of behavior we actually want, then we only kind of have half the story.
Yeah. And even in like that guardrail metaphor, it's like, if I think of a cop as a bowler, like, do you want the guy who's like, yeah, put the bumpers up because I'm sloppy as shit. Or someone who's like, there's someone in need. I know how to like solve it. Let me just bowl a strike here. I don't need guardrails because I'm focused on a different version, which is like, I'm out of control. How do you contain that?
Mm-hmm. I want that guy who said, who do you think you are? I am. That's
that bowler. Yeah,
that's the bowler exactly. metaphor. Shots.
But yeah, Jack, to your question about values. I mean, I like if you can generalize that the education work to policing, I mean, I think that you can create incentive structures. In fact, there's a small group in LA, the Community Safety Partnership, that there was just an independent evaluation of this particular police program, which was designed around changing incentives. So officers were rewarded for building relationships instead of making arrests. Mm-hmm. And so the value was in the relationship. That's what they were actually being rewarded for. And the analysis that came out of this of that program found that it did change police behavior, actually. And it also decreased wow. violent crime.
That's very cool. Shout out to L.A. Is that was an LAPD?
It was, believe it or yes, it was LAPD. Oh. It was a small group that's currently headed by Amata Tingarides, Deputy Chief Amata Tingarides. And it was like a small pilot program that started in Watts in, I want to say, 2011 with like 40 officers that were tasked with creating relationships and were rewarded on the basis of whether they created relationships with the community.
That's very cool. What's something you think is underrated?
Definitely Jordan Peele's new movie, Nope. I yeah. feel like it's underrated. I think that movie is super dope. I was in the theater doing finger guns the whole time and so many parts of it because it had so many like cool like mergings of influences and genres and styles. I was like, oh, this movie's great. But at the same time, when the lights went up, I could audibly hear people talking about like, I don't know about this one. What's going on with this one? And I'm just in my seat seething because I'm like, yo, it's not supposed to be Get Out. It's not supposed to be Us.
Yeah.
It's a whole different movie. Enjoy the movie for what it is.
Right.
Let go of your expectations. Get into it, brother.
They're like, what it mean, black cowboy? People's like Google search and shit.
It's like, yeah, I'm, you know, so I've been seeing a whole lot of mixed reviews about it from various sources, but mm-hmm. I love the movie. I think people should go see that movie for sure.
Right, yes. right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I'm waiting to go maybe in the next couple weekends or something. I was supposed to go with my wife, okay. but that's like okay. burning a hole in my pocket if I had a ticket where I was like, please let me go to see this one. Yeah, yeah. I can't wait. And it really has been, it's wild. I was talking to a group of friends. And mm-hmm. people were split in that group.
Yeah.
And people who were like, even like, I know it's a different film. It's like, I'm just thinking like, could it have been better even as a genre thing? I was like, okay, you know what? I just want to talk to people who are like, go see it.
I saw people immediately in hate mode, like fresh out of the theater seat. Like, oh, nope. Like, nope. Truly nope. I don't like this.
Yeah.
Just like, damn. Crossed arms.
Yeah. It was so crazy. I didn't expect that, you know, but I enjoyed the movie. So jokes on them.
Hey, thanks.
Yeah. It's so enjoyable. There's so much good stuff in it. Like, I can see a criticism that it's, like, not as coherent as his other ones, because, like, there's just, like, a lot of cool ideas, but also, like, doesn't need to be coherent. Yeah, he's, right. like, an artist, you know?
Yeah.
He's putting things out there. But, yeah, I agree. Like, people after the movie, like, walking down the escalator were like, I didn't know what he was saying half the time. I couldn't understand him. So,
wait, the character or
what are we talking about?
Oh no!
Oh, like literally, I cannot.
Him. Oh wow, they're doing that one.
Yeah.
What dialect was that?
Oh my god.
Oh shit. Yeah.
I mean, okay. I think he's a good actor, but I didn't know what he was saying. But oh my god, that movie is great. Everybody should go check it out.
Absolutely.
What else is out in movies? I feel like they stopped releasing movies after Top Gun came out. They were like, we did it. We're good until Nope.
There was just a like article about how, what do you call it? Like, August is like very, not much going on in August.
You know what I saw though? I saw Bullet Train is out.
Oh yeah, Bullet Train came out.
I did see that. That was okay.
Yeah, that looks aggressively not... okay.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, hey, that's a perfect description. Yeah. It is definitely aggressively okay.
Extra medium.
I don't know about y'all. How do y'all feel about Brad Pitt's acting in general? Like, what, how do y'all feel?
He's like a vibe. He's not an actor. He's like a vibes dealer.
Word.
You know?
Hey, we're on the same page.
Yeah,
same
to me, page. I'm never like, damn, Brad Pitt fucking bodied that role.
Yeah.
I'm like, Brad Pitt has he contains multitudes, and it just depends which one he pulls out of his bag.
Yeah. My thing is like, Brad Pitt did not ruin this good movie. Tight.
Yeah. And I don't mind, because just like, hey, I'm Brad Pitt. And I'm like, fine. Cool.
Yeah. He really is himself. It all, like, we could be in the 1800s. We could be in the future.
Yeah.
You could be a
traveler in Snatch. I'm like, yeah, Brad Pitt too. Yeah. He said Periwinkle Blue, you know, for the
I'm Brad Pitt with an accent. But I'm Brad.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Is he eating throughout this? That is one of the things that I usually need him to be doing.
I do remember some eating. I definitely remember some drinking of water. He definitely was drinking. He was staying hydrated.
Yeah.
He likes to put things in his mouth.
That's another one that's super divisive too. People who love it or hate it. My mom was like, I love that shit.
Wait, what?
Meanwhile, Big Hearn, Steve Hernandez, tough guy of the year. I saw him tweet. He said he walked out of Bullet Train.
Oh, wow. Bullet Train?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Steve Hernandez, he tweeted, I had to retweet that with the tough guy gif, because I was like, oh, you walked out of Bullet Train, huh? All right, homie. I see you.
There are a lot of things that get wrapped up very neatly in that movie. I can see somebody like not digging that, but like walkout movie, like the last movie I walked out of was like that Johnny Knoxville movie where he was like in the Special Olympics, like
this shit is fucked up.
I gotta go.
It was a crime against humanity.
Yeah. Like, I can't be here. But other than that, like, damn, like, bullet.
I remember after the fact, too, they were trying to, like, really act like they were doing everybody a solid. They're like, yeah, but these people, like, now they got little careers going. They're like, they were doing press for the show.
Right? Yeah.
You're not, like, don't lay your head at night on your big pillow of I'm an ally and, like, helped with, right. you know, better representation. Like, no, come on now. But, yeah, the Bullet Train thing, I feel like it looks so campy that I can tell, like, you might either be pissed off because it's so camp, or you can accept that and be like, I don't know, fine, fuck it. It was, you know, it's an airplane movie, but.
Yeah, for sure.
Zara, what is something you think is overrated?
Switch it up.
Your lawn, your grass, get rid
Hell
of
yeah.
it. Oh my God, why yep. is it still everywhere? My car, why did I say my car?
The other is, most American thing.
Well, it's just making me sad that I said that, because I really just meant my desk.
Mm.
And that means that I feel like I'm in a moving vehicle behind the screen that I stare at.
And you do have one of those little Fisher Price like steering wheel things, and you've been hitting the going beep beep every time you want to start talking. So
you
I think
love
it's
my
effective.
Fisher Price steering wheel, yeah. Jack.
Uh-huh. You've had the turn signal on the entire recording, though, so I would ask that you.
Anyways.
I'm just
get rid of your lawn, fools! What the hell? It's 125 degrees in some places.
Oh yeah.
People are mowing dead yellow grass.
Just kicking up dust.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Just go to nice drought-proof plants if you like the plants in the front. The lawn shit. I mean, this is there was just like an article about how northern Mexico, like there's really, really severe water rationing happening to combat drought. But meanwhile, just over the border, like in Laredo, Texas, they're using like there's something like 10 million gallons a day or something on fucking like lawns and stuff. And I'm sure like LA, every drought area that has lawns has some absurd number they're wasting just purely on watering grass. Mm. But it feels like one of the easiest. I mean, like, I get that there's so many things that we obviously need to lean on, like changing our energy mix and much bigger ideas and things like that to save the planet. But I like the more I look at it, I'm like, I don't need to see fucking grass all the fucking time, like in a place that's a desert.
There are succulents that look like grass.
Yeah.
You don't need to do this. And also the causes of some wildfires have been lawnmowers on dead dry grass that shoot sparks and catch fire.
Right.
Anyway.
They're like, what are you doing? I put my friction machine over this fuel pile in high winds. Right.
I don't understand what happened. What?
Wildfires are job creators, Zara. That's what you have to understand.
So. Yeah, for prison labor. You sound like a warden right now. It's actually a really great employment opportunity for our chattel slave, prison teammates.
No, I get it. I've been hired for arson and I've done it, but
hired for arson.
My heart was not in it. It just was not.
Yeah. That's why it warms my heart to see the golf courses where activists have been filling up the holes with cement.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Although I will say, just turn up the green. Don't fill up the holes with cement because the hole, like they move the hole every day. So you can just like, that's easy for them to, they could just poke that shit out. But love the effort, and the symbolism is great. It's just like, that's probably didn't fuck with them too bad. But
no, brings attention though.
Because they're so precious about their little grass, their little fairway grass. They got the little things that like comb it and like primp it after you hit the ball off of the grass. They're like, it's got to be smooth.
Right. Like, what's the movie where they're like tunneling out of prison and they're like taking the dirt with them out into the yard?
Right. Shawshank
The Great Escape?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, is that Shawshank Redemption 2?
Well, Shawshank, he's like letting the dirt loose through his pant leg.
Oh, yeah. And then they lampoon that in Naked Gun, too, when they're trying to escape. And he's just like sitting on a fucking mountain. I'm like, do you do a similar thing, but with like grass killer on a fucking golf course? Like you just wear big pants. And you're like, four. And then like a bunch of shit's coming out the bottom of that guy's pants and spelling fuck you and eat the rich on the fairway.
Yeah, are we still like shitting on lawns?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
we had to take a sharp right turn into the country club real quick. Speaking of grass,
listen, now that I'm employed, there are all these freelance jobs I have to say no to. And that's where these are coming from.
And this is coming from like 10, 15 years into your future for the rest of America, because I was back east and everything's green back there just by accident. Like there's just like grass growing places, like, because what else is going to happen? Of course, grass is going to grow there. But yeah, we are we're into the drought that's coming for all of us. And the only things that are green are golf courses and like a handful of
agribusiness.
Right. There's like 25 states that don't need grass.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
In this union.
Never had
like,
it.
And look, I love a field for like sport, but you know, the turf is getting pretty good, you know?
Yeah.
For, you know, I don't...
This is also because outside my window, while I'm trying to podcast, there's these huge John Deere's over this like 10 by 10 patch. It doesn't make any sense. And there's so much diesel.
Doing donuts, essentially.
There's so much diesel. They are. They do donuts. They're having a blast. I feel for these guys. I get it. It's a good time. But it sucks. And so that's where my underrated comes in.
Which is?
What is your underrated?
These are dark chocolate almonds.
Uh-huh.
Well, and, hold on.
Yeah.
I like how you get, yo, we gotta get off the fucking lawn business too. One of the most water intensive products in the fucking state. The actual one of the biggest reasons that California is experiencing drought because of the fucking almond industry.
Now, yes. Almond's not water intensive enough. This we gotta brings add me cocoa beans.
That's what I'm saying. Fuck the lawn, so I can have more of these chocolate covered almonds at a reduced Thank fucking you. Price.
This brings me to my underrated mention, which is hypocrisy. Is really the cure for heart disease in this nation.
Try it out.
It's shot, great. Folks. It will keep you alive so long.
Wait, but let me see those almonds again. They're good?
Yeah. They Each one, I taste gallons of water.
Right.
In the chocolate goodness.
You're like, with each almond, that's one less child 30 years from now that will know the feeling of grass under their bare feet.
Know what a shower is.
Yeah. Do you ever think about that? Like, these are really weird small details that is going to go missing from kids. Like, honestly, grass, right? Like, I'm out here really thinking, looking at my own shit, I'm like, what the fucking grass necessary?
Oh my God, we already live in the era where most people don't know what I mean by a real university experience.
Right. Mm.
Or like what it's like to have campus life.
Right.
You know, and like there's so many things like you don't think about like 50 years from now or something with the water shortages and stuff. You think like, you know, immediate like pools, you know, sprinklers, water bottles. And you don't think like, oh, yeah, we might not be able to produce almonds anymore because it's just so water intensive.
Right. Or we do because they have an outsized influence in the state legislature. And they're like, I'm sorry, man. If only you guys had more lobbyists.
Right. It's like when you look at like corn politics and then it's like, oh, yeah, that's my batteries and my Advil and like my windowsill. You know, like, right.
You know, that AstroTurf you use on your lawn is actually made from recycled almonds. They just make too many almonds. So they've turned it into...
It's an almond-based AstroTurf. It's regenerative.
Let me tell you about this little heart salve that I call hypocrisy, folks. Mm. Get on board.
You gotta sip from it every now and then.
Mm. You know? Simply must.
Well, see, because when you get drunk off it, that's when it's problems. But every now and then, it's like... Just a quick little taste.
I knew you'd get it.
Yeah. Shout out Blue Diamond Almonds, inaugural sponsor of the podcast.
All right, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have like one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And Liz Cheney, as predicted, defeated in her primary race against someone whose name I have not committed to memory, but you
I mean,
know,
there's
just like
really, really no need to. It's not that important. At the most you need to know is that this woman, Harriet Hageman, had one of the worst looking like fashion choices I've ever seen. Like a really has this like quilt coat that's baffling. But anyway,
like sound baffling.
Almost, yes.
It would work very well as sound baffling.
It really would. It really would. Mm-hmm. You know, it, you know, got her own MAGA swag. Her own swagger, but yeah, she one-handedly, I think, like 68% of the vote. She got 68% of the vote. So, you know, I think if you turn on like CNN or MSNBC, some are like being like, hey, you know, it's like almost treating her like a fallen hero. But come on, y'all. Like, she deserves mm-hmm. no applause. Like, she helped elevate Trump. She voted with him 93% of the time and only found a mm-hmm. backbone after January 6th, presumably because she hoped that an electoral defeat would be a tidy way to get him out the way, which is, I just feel like that's the most charity I could give her. So I'll give her, you know what? I'll give her 1 point because she did draw the line at election theft, but not at things like restricting like healthcare or LGBTQ rights or voting rights or human rights and shit like that. So mm-hmm. there it is. But really what this says is that this is pretty much the, as many people are saying, it's the purge of anybody who went against Trump in the House is pretty much gone off without a hitch.
Yeah, 8 out of 10. So
yeah,
and you said there's two left and they're hanging on by technicalities.
Yeah, like one, like there's a, it's just like the way the district is set. It's just it's like a, it's an eventuality. I think the other is a friend of Kevin McCarthy, and Kevin McCarthy like begged Trump to not like name him to eke out a fucking win.
Spare him, sir.
Yeah, no, seriously. So, you know, it's her speech when she conceded was sort of like, you know, I could have won this race, but I didn't want to throat the whole boot. Okay, I only wanted to lick the tip a little bit a few years ago. And then I drew the line there, and that's why I got smashed by somebody who was willing to regurgitate any amount of nonsense. So, you know, this is probably, you know, obviously the end of the road for her as a congressperson at the moment, but there's already a lot of talk and, you know, saying like, yeah, I might think about running for president too. And there's like a new leadership pack that she's like shifting her money into that's called like the Great Task or some shit. Very cryptic.
The Great Task is fucking foreboding as hell. Yeah, man.
it's some shit like that. Ooh. Very, very, very honest. So, and a lot of people think like, you know, that may be her ultimate aim, is to just be a permanent thorn in Trump's side. But yeah,
I mean, her as a presidential candidate feels very like the wet dream of like CNN. CNN loves that shit.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of like, first of all, she's, you know, got legacy. She's got the nepotism thing going. She has like a, you know, what when the national news cycle was like, well, Jeb Bush is going to be the nominee type shit. Like,
right.
I feel like that I could see her getting a lot of attention that way. And if she can somehow rip off the Band-Aid for, you know, getting people's mind around third parties, I would be all about that.
Who knows? I mean, look, a good pedigree though. You know, her dad actually knows how to steal an election.
That's so true.
Like, look out. I mean, that's a feather in
your
hat.
Can't forget about Florida.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But yeah, we'll see. Well, I don't know. I mean, Amy, what do you think? You see her being serious, like having a serious political career after? A lot of people think maybe she'll just be a pundit.
No, man. I think she's done. I think she also knows that she's done. It's like that scene at the end of Black Panther where T'Challa at the end is like, you know what? I can kind of see things your way now. It still doesn't erase everything that the villain has done the whole movie. You know what I mean? Liz Cheney is a very staunch conservative. And when we're thinking about what's good for the country, forget what's good for the country. Think about where the polls are, the national polls, and what people actually want. She's one of those people that's voted regularly against what nationally people in America actually want for this country. And on top of that, if we want to just for a second talk about her position on waterboarding, she doesn't think that waterboarding is actually torture. She's on record saying that it's not torture and that it's an interrogation technique that works.
Yeah.
And to this day, she still thinks that that's why in the end we were able to get Bin Laden. Never mind the fact that the CIA themselves had their own fact-finding agency that produced like a 6,700-page report that in the end concluded that there is no evidence saying that any information obtained by any of those interrogation techniques, if you want to, I'm going to call it torture, nothing obtained by torture helped us get Bin Laden. But that doesn't matter. You know what I mean? She's still in that realm of conservative where her position matters more than the truth.
100%.
And when it comes to actually hurting people and hurting the country, I don't know, man. I'm kind of glad to see her go. It's nice that she, at the very end, grew a conscience, but we would have loved to see that conscience. But what I think I'm more worried about is where the conservative and Republican Party is going, because I think in my opinion, what was at stake was what Trump's power. I think a lot of people were talking about Trump as being this tangential figure in the Republican Party now. He's sort of out of the way. He's quieter. He's off Twitter. He doesn't have that reach. I think he proved a lot of people wrong by getting Liz Cheney totally, you know, it's insane the margin that she was beat out by, man. Like, just that's insane. Yeah. Incumbent. I don't think that's ever happened before, ever. So I think it's not a good sign if you're someone who's worried about Trump's power. And at the same time, knowing now that the Republican Party is a party that's loyal to a person, it's going to get hairier from here is what I'm feeling.
A lot of people are like, bro, I think some of these people think this motherfucker's Jesus. The way some of these evangelicals are talking too, it's like he's redefining religion for some people with like their adherence to everything that he says. I mean, I think one of the reasons why they're really energized too is like the Republicans, it's easier to be like, this motherfucker's a traitor and right. turn out against them while being upset at like what, you know, Democrats being in power. But for sure, I mean, like it shows that that grievance vote was very potent there. But I don't know, you know, maybe she'll spoil the party. I don't know. It's like, I don't know who she takes. It's like those people who might be like, I can't get with Trump. It's like, well, I don't know if those are votes for anybody else but him anyway.
Dude.
But yeah.
I recently ran a piece in Slate about the line between extremism and mainstream Republican politics shrinking, right? Mm-hmm. And so I talked to a research fellow at the Soufian Center, which is like this far right. Not far. They investigate extremism wherever it comes from. Mm-hmm. And they found that line, that's, you know, the distance that a person has to travel to find crazy conspiracies and violent rhetoric has virtually disappeared. Yeah. And now if you go online and you're looking for just run-of-the-mill conservative ideas, you're pretty much guaranteed to be funneled into one of these corners of the internet where you're bound to encounter some of the most hardcore shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so this, I think, like the whole Liz Cheney thing is just, it's like a symptom of a bigger problem, which is that the person who's online looking for conservative ideas now mm-hmm. is just being thrashed with so much of this crazy extremist shit. And I'm not talking about just like extremism on like abortion or
We're talking about replacement theory.
We got to burn it down. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like accelerationist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's insane. So I think that distinction is important between like what Republican ideas are and like the extremism shit that this group is talking about when they're, for example, trying to kind of tear all of the institutions apart, tear trust away from these institutions so that people feel helpless in working with the system. So they start looking for solutions outside the system. Mm-hmm. And those solutions are not going to be peaceful, right?
No.
Now we're talking about subverting the will of American democracy, the will of your neighbor. Now you're just trying to enforce it by force. And so what does that look like? It looks like the dude going and setting his car on fire in front of in Washington, D.C. And we're talking about the dude who tried to blast through a bulletproof glass in an FBI building in Cincinnati with a nail gun. You know,
right?
That's what that looks like, and so right. I think it's not looking good. It's not looking good.
But do you think like he is more electorally viable than like people are giving him credit? Like it seems to me like he is the presumptive like winner of the 2020. Not even the nominee.
This name would be a primary.
I don't like he's gonna be the nominee. Like I feel like. The amount of energy we're seeing out here and like unprecedented wins in, you know, granted it's Wyoming or whatever the fuck, but like it just feels like that people are once again sleeping on the fact that Trump is going to be the president again, barring some manner of like, I don't know, charges against him, which is also very unlikely, I feel like. I don't know, man. It's bleak times. And like, what does a Trump presidency look like?
Well, yeah, man? But
like,
I don't know. I mean, that's why that's why it's like? Close to got to pay attention to these midterms, man. That's you'll see how much people are like, oh, do I have to vote to keep my rights for the first? Like, do I need to go get out to do that? Will they do that? Are people connected enough to what the stakes are? Mm-hmm. Is by virtue of all of the talk in like DC really centering around like what's going on with Trump? Like, is he going to jail? Is he getting indicted? Is he getting charged? Definitely good for like the media energy machine. But then like when I do see people like Eric Trump being like, these people were like fighting over giving me dinner. You got to see that. I'm like, that shit didn't happen, fool. Shut up. Like, it's not right. like that. Okay. But I do understand that it is. This is the absolute position Fox, Trump, the right wing loves to be in is to get into like, we got, they're coming for us mode.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, seeing how like ill-equipped Republicans are when asked to comment on everything are like about the situation, then you're like, damn, like I'm sure these people would again rather be trying to say like, actually falling gas prices is bad for Americans. Because that was like
they're really about it, man. You know, I think the lesson from 2016 when Hillary lost was that elections aren't won by energizing your base. The elections are won by getting the other side to not show up, you know?
Right.
Right.
That was the issue with Hillary. It's not that Trump's support got him over the edge. It was that, but also Hillary supporters didn't show up, you know, partly because of, you know, her emails and the FBI opening an investigation just literally the same month of the election. But at the same time, it's you know, I think we need to be thinking about that moving forward a little bit more, because what is it that's going to get Democrats out and to vote, right?
I think the problem is, right, we always talk about it. I just saw a headline. It's like, what can Joe Biden do to bring out the youth vote? Or, you know, like what has to happen? And it sounds like this thing where the youth vote is this thing that, like, it's like through this alchemy, we can energize them. What is the secret recipe? When really it's about it's not about the youth vote waking up. It's about, can the party actually appeal to people? Stop putting it in the hands of, like, can the youth vote wake up? It's like, are you even espousing policies that interest people? Like, can you even connect with them? It's not that you're trying to prod this, like, dead fucking body on the side of the road. Be like, hey, come on, man, wake up. It's about, can you even put something in the air that people are like, oh, that's a direction that I believe in, that we can go for? Because a lot of times people, you know, hear a lot of political talk and like, this is a bunch of bullshit. Case in point. Fucking Andrew Yang recently out here talking about his third party on CNN. And this guy thinks he's so big brained. He's like, no, man, it's about going forward, man. It's about progress. Oh, OK. Mm-hmm. I know progress means something very specific to me. But when he was asked by Jim Acosta on CNN, this dude, oh, my. You got to listen to this. But like, this is what happens when your people pleasing part of your brain is completely blown out because you don't even know what to do. Like, you're just right. Like, how can I please anybody?
These things have taken over my body.
OK, here we go. Please, please show us the way, Andrew.
On both sides.
But you're going to have to come up with policy
really
positions.
Negative results.
Right.
We
but Andrew,
just need a better system.
Yeah. But Andrew, you're going to have policy positions at some point. How does the Forward Party feel about Roe versus Wade? Should it have been overturned?
Well, I personally think that women's reproductive rights are fundamental human rights. But the Forward Party has not left or right, but forward stance on even the most divisive and contentious issues.
What does that mean? Don't you have to take a position on something?
What are you talking about, man?
You can't just say, this is a hot button issue, so I'm not going to take a position on you. You know, if you want to run the country, you're going to have to make some hard decisions, Andrew.
Again, the Forward Party is about that common sense consensus majority view, which is very clear on abortion. It's clear.
What about guns? What about assault weapons?
It's clear on climate change. It's actually clear on just about every issue under the sun.
Should 18-year-olds be able to buy AR-15s?
Because of the nature of our system.
Should 18-year-olds be able to buy AR-15s?
Again, the common sense consensus majority is that there should be some rules around background checks and access to firearms. But we're not getting any of these things, Jim, because the two-party system does not need to deliver.
But it doesn't sound like...
Okay, bro. It doesn't even sound like you can fucking deliver on even having a take on shit.
This is so the idea that he's pitching is a third party that is the center, is to the center. And that is based on this talking point that was created by the Republicans, that is, the Democrats are too far extreme. To the left, too extreme, except they're not extreme about literally anything. Like, there's not an extreme left position that is occupied by the Democratic Party. So, like, anytime you try and ask, like, this new idea for a third party to, like, articulate how their position is different from the Democrats in any way, they can't, because the Democrats are the centrist party. The issue is we don't have a party that is to the left.
Or as like he says, left or right, but forward. Okay, so you're talking progress, right?
Uh-huh.
That's, I think that's a wrap, sir, if that's what you're saying. Because right. If we're talking progress inherently, we're talking about disrupting the status quo. And you should be able to articulate things like, rather than falling back on a tidy talking point, like, well, the common sense consensus. Well, if your party represents that, then fucking say that.
Right.
And what but is, I just Yeah. The problem is, like, you just, there needs to be a party that's like, okay, we're not going to fucking waffle. It's like, we need a go hard part. Like, we go hard. We're not mincing words about shit. Like, and that's what the Republicans are right now. But they're just going hard for fucking autocracy and the fucking Christo fascism.
Well, right. There's a, like, whole middle, like, fuzzy middle part that is, like, traditional Democrats and traditional, like, Republicans. And then there is, like, a fascist thing that is what, like, MAGA has become. And that's it. That's the entirety of, like, American political thought. Like, those are your options. Nobody has articulated anything else other than, you know, like, a handful of people who are not, well, like, I mean, really unless viable candidates.
Unless you yourself are, like, reading, like, about, like, actually educating yourself on, like, socialism and things like that. I mean, yeah, there are many ways to look at, you know, how our country's operating. But I think because the ones that, like you're saying, those are the ones that are most readily available and overly represented for people who are just like, let me click on this news site.
Right.
What do you guys think about, like, preferential voting? You know, when you, like, assign a party a number and you say, okay, I kind of like, I'll give Democrats a 3, Republicans a 2, and the Green Party a 1. And you just, like, they calculate it that way. I think they do that in other countries.
Yeah, do that. Anything better than the 2-party system that we have right now. Like, that, the current, like, winner-take-all thing and the current, like, entrenched Republican-Democrat are, you know, they make it impossible for a third party. So, like, yeah, that would be great. I feel like the only way we see any third party is if Trump is prevented from being the Republican nominee, then, like, comes through as a third party candidate, and like something extreme and accidental. And, you know, something that neither of the 2 major parties can deal with. Because right now, like, there's so the whole, they are the entire system, Republican and Democratic parties. So, like, you really can't do anything unless you already, like, have built in a majority of, like, you know, just an insane numbers or energy or something like that.
I mean, I feel like the energy right now is with fucking organized labor.
Right. You know?
That's something that is becoming increasingly more at the front of mind for American people, especially working people. And we see a lot of people who are, you know, fighting to try and get equitable wages and benefits and things like that. And again, we always, you know, you always see, like, oh, these talking points work when you're like, hey, man, you should be able to fucking live off of one job and shit like that. But again, the issue is you're always going to go up against the donor class, which are the people who cut the checks for the people whose vote you're trying to get. And they're gonna be like, hey, man, don't talk that shit. Like, you're going to fucking raise my taxes, man. Fuck out of here. Fucking, I'll wreck your whole shit with fucking with attack ads. Come on now.
You know what I kind of hate the way that it's set up right now, because it will split the vote like crazy. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean by splitting the vote? Like, if we have people who are going to be looking at this long list of parties and they're going to be thinking, oh, well, I kind of am not sure if I'm going to go left or super left or even more left, then that'll split the vote. So I'm Egyptian, and I was paying really close attention in, I think it was like 2012, when Egypt had, like, the first democratic election ever in its history, right? Going all the way back to pharaonic times even. And the way that they did their election was kind of like what we do here, where everybody's invited to make their own parties, right? But there were these 2 existing parties that were already, they had already a ton of support. I'm talking about the Muslim Brotherhood, which is like the theocratic conservative party. But then they also had the military, which is sort of the old regime, which is also like a super hardcore conservative party. So everybody who wanted to vote progressive or liberal, which when I was down there and was interviewing people in Tahrir Square, was most people, right? Nobody wanted the Muslim Brotherhood, and nobody wanted the old government that they just revolted against. Mm-hmm. And so they were just trying to argue over, like, who was the better of these 3 different liberal parties. And so what happened in the end? The conservatives voted for the Muslim group, the Muslim Brotherhood. The military people voted for the military group, and they were all in line. They had their support. And then all the people voted for liberals, which if you added up all those tallies, they would have won. They weren't even on the runoff. They weren't even in the top two.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It was like split between 100 different parties and candidates. And yeah,
exactly. Yeah. And so all of the people that I, when I was there, when they were talking about, oh, who are you going to vote for, this person or that person? Neither of them were ever heard from again, you know, because they didn't even have that kind of support to compete with the government or compete with, I'm calling it the government, compete with the military or compete with the Muslim Brotherhood. So I'm almost like, I think we need to make up our mind. Do we want just the two parties? Are we going to vote fascism, yes or no?
Right.
Or do we want that kind of tiered system where we can say, I'm going to give this one 3 points, this one 2 points, this one 5 points. And that way there's sort of at least like a second choice, you know?
Yeah. Right. It's like, and at the end of the day, like whenever I think of it, I'm like, yeah, that would work. And then I'm like, but the second you give people the option to take a bite out of a corporation's ass and that's popular, like the amount of money that's spent to like defeat policies like that, I'm like, what's first? Like, do we just need to get the money out of politics first? You know, to even have some semblance of a process that isn't completely tampered with by moneyed interest. But on some level, it always be because, you know, our reliance on like the media and things like that. But it's a complex problem. And yeah, at the moment, I think we're just stuck with, hey, you want which old guy you want? Yeah. You want like kind of
pick an old guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Pick an old guy. Which one you want? The one who's like, you know, kind of chill, or the one who's definitely a fascist? And then you're like, fuck, what about like someone
fascist
like,
or fascist light? Pick one.
Right, exactly.
Right.
Sugar-free fascist.
Citizens United has been like a flashpoint on the left that I've seen at least some people rallying behind. I know the Bernie Sanders crowd was very in favor of repealing that. I would love to see more energy behind that. I think you're right. I think, and I do some of my own monitoring of the right-wing extremists. And they hate money in politics just as much as a Bernie Sanders supporter would, you know? And in fact, some of them love Trump so much because they see him as the anti-establishment candidate.
Right.
And right now they're doing a victory lap over Liz Cheney because they see him as
old, like, swampy.
As the person that can get rid of some of these establishment types.
Right.
You know? So it's, I think one of the tweets that I saw from like this hardcore right person was, you know, because of Trump, we won't have a Bush or a Cheney in politics right now.
Right.
And that they see him as like that kind of politics vanquisher. And so I think if we can find a way to bring that to the forefront, I think that'd be a strong uniter. I think you're onto something.
It's just the one, it's like the answer to every question we have, you know, like we talk about like, well, how come it's still being so hard for this Starbucks union push right now? It's like, well, the fucking the National Labor Relations Board is severely underfunded and they can't keep up with helping like workers organize when like that's the federal agency tasked with it. And you get why people will drag their heels as representatives of Congress to not fund certain things because of how the money flows. And I'm like, it answers so many questions. And like, I remember when I was working in politics, I was like, damn, it's this fucking just in front of your face.
Forward. Yeah.
It's like this motherfucker signs your biggest check. So now all of your fucking energy goes into protecting this person's fucking business interests. And then like, meanwhile, you glad hand in your district and be like, yeah, man, we'll build this community center and shit. But no, you're not. You're going to go because you've been paid to like vote a certain way on these like 10 bills every year that really matter most to your donors. And then you fucking go on with it and you save your time from having to actually fundraise like small dollar donations because lobbyists come in with huge packaged donations from other moneyed interests. And now you're like, oh, shit, I'm set. I got more. No, who's going to try and fucking step to me in a primary? I'll blow them out with the amount of cash I have because I'm backed by all this money. And I think that's the one, that's like, I feel like without that piece being taken out, there's absolutely no fucking way because they're always able to put their fingers in shit.
Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll keep talking about this and what's happening with Starbucks.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV True Crime Podcast, To Live and Die in L.A. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half.
It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Ilya Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow, thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh, yeah.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
And we're back. Just want to touch briefly on Burger King. They just like, I just feel like they're creepy. You know, like the Burger King mascot guy, that's creepy. Yes. He's creepy.
I'm still adjusting to
him. I'm just going to say, just a word for him. I don't think he's as scary as their original Ronald McDonald, though.
Oh, yeah. Fair. I mean.
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
Clowns are always fucking scary.
Clowns beat plastic head kings.
Yeah. But he's like, because he's like a mixture of like a Guy Fawkes mask and like that Duracell family from the 90s commercials.
Oh,
that
my
were like
gosh,
all those
yeah.
like super exaggerated facial features, white family, like, hey, we're the Duracell people.
Yeah.
That's what the Burger King guy, like, he's definitely their cousin or some shit. But Burger King, they're back at it again, freaking out their customers. They sent a mass email with a blank receipt for an order Like, where it just says, thanks for ordering from Burger King. Your order will be ready and placed at, like, with all this blank stuff. So, it, like, it didn't really have any details, but it said, thanks for ordering. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were then like, oh, fuck, did someone hack my shit? Yeah. And it's, like, doing what all people do when they immediately get their hands on a hacked account, which is buy Burger King. And the Burger King later claimed that this was simply, they said, oh, they're being coy, and then said it's just the result of an internal processing error. People were just sort of like, I've never created a Burger King account. So how do you even have my, like, what is this? So with that piece aside, a lot of people are like, wait, they're also owned by Restaurant Brands International. And if you remember in Canada, Tim Hortons.
Shout out Timmy's.
Like, massive data breach where, like, all this sensitive information, like, leaked. And, like, even the privacy commissioner in Canada said, like, this, quote, crossed the line for, like, how much, like, of this information that came out. And at the time, Tim, like, Hortons were like, please don't sue us. How about we give you a coffee and a donut?
How about some Timbits?
Okay. No? Maybe? And, you know, people weren't too happy about that either. But
about your data loss.
Yeah, sorry about your data loss. I know someone completely started 3 credit cards and maxed them out already with your fake information. Would you like a cruller?
Yeah, yeah.
Or an iced coffee?
This coffee is only slightly burnt.
Yeah, only exactly.
Only slightly.
But, like, you know, this is like a thing that people were like, okay, whatever. What the fuck is going on? Like, this is kind of part and parcel with Burger King's, like, weird creep marketing. Mm. And a lot of people are like, this has to be part of, like, some kind of, like, elaborate scheme. Because in the past, like, this is what they've done in the past. In 2017, they made a commercial specifically designed to hijack a Google Home device.
Yeah.
Oh, it was like, so to the point where Google had to, like, they said, this is from this article, quote, viewers discovered that by asking, okay, Google, what is the Whopper burger? Like, the speakers would then do all this other stuff. And Google had to intervene and be like, we had to stop this prompt, like, from our products, like, understanding this prompt because it's just causing too much chaos. And that was it, we thought. And then in 2015, apparently, they had to settle a $8.5 million, like, class action lawsuit over junk fax ads, like facsimile machines, faxes. They were sending in the year of our Lord, 2015, faxes to fucking people.
I That's believe amazing. That. I worked at Hold a on. Place that got faxes. Still, it was a theater company, okay. And we would get spam from people like that,
right?
That's yeah, incredible. Every day we get at least like 5 faxes, and it was like 2012 through 2015 or something.
What?
Yeah.
And I didn't even know people had fax machines in 2015.
I didn't know either.
Converted into an email and would get sent to like one of the admins.
Or you're like, God. Or like, I remember working in an office like where the big networking Xerox machine was also a fax machine. Mm. And then every now and then you look in the printing tray and then like faxes had come in and you're like, what the fuck? I am not interested in a ghost? Reverse mortgage on my car. What? Yeah. But the people that were or members of that class action lawsuit were getting up to $500 per fax that they received. Wow. And they could get a maximum of $4,000 back. And that totaled out to like $8.5 million. So,
oh, now I really wish I would have gotten one of those faxes.
I was going to say, I want one of these faxes.
I know.
Where are my $500?
You know, people are making money from getting, like, coming after the spam text people.
Mm. Oh, they love me. They're calling me all the time.
If your name,
I got scam likely on speed dial.
Sorry to completely derail this, but, like, if you're on the do not call registry and someone is, like, hitting you up, if you can find out who the actual entity is behind that call, you can typically just be like, here's a form letter that sounds lawyery, and they'll try and settle with you.
No, but
okay, here's some money. Shut the fuck up, please.
Get on that.
I need this. Anyway. I get about 30 calls a day. I'm not exaggerating.
Wow. If you're on and it takes energy though. Like, a lot of people say, like, you have to have the time to be like, what is this company? Who runs it? Can I get an email? Because it's different than, like, if you're getting scammed, right? If someone's calling you and being like, hello, I'm from Windows XP Security, that's a different thing. But, like, when you get the ones that's like, hey, your auto warranty, if you can find out who's sending
replace your HVAC.
Yeah, you can get. And get some money, you know. Get there's a way to fight back.
This sounds like an episode of Get Rich Nick.
Right. Just be like just balling off of complaints from being on the do not call list.
Go on.
Another thing I just want to add, lastly, In 2009, Burger King also made a Facebook app that, remember Facebook apps? Damn.
I was going to say, wait, what?
Yeah, remember they were like built, they were part of.
I remember. Okay. I was just,
sorry. That I haven't used in so long. It's believable that you wouldn't remember. And I was like, hey, I know. It's been a while.
I just went back in my brain and went.
This app basically said, if you delete 10 Facebook friends, you get a free Whopper.
Hi. Y'all are gone. Sorry. Yeah. Miles, you're out. I'm getting this Whopper.
That's fine, bro. Get your Whopper. I don't give a shit. I won't be precious about that. Get your free fucking Whopper. But then after they were doing it, like, it would also send a message, though. Like, if the person got deleted, this app from Burger King would let them know their friendship was, quote, valued at less than 1/10 of a Whopper.
Oh,
why?
Just like dunk on them. And then Facebook shut the shit down after 10 days.
That's
how does that like as a business decision? This is just bad.
Because that part is bad marketing.
Now these people all hate Burger King. Like bad business. Why not refer people to Burger King and get 10% off your next Whopper?
Right.
As opposed to just tell them they're worth less than 1/10 of a Whopper.
People over.
Literally. Oh my God.
And then we'll message them. Nah, 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 nah. Which is, I'm sure will put you into their hearts in a positive way. And when they did like an analysis of what happened, about 20,000 people took them up like on the deleting the 10 people. But then in CNET, they were like, yeah, but they also created 200,000 people who are like pissed at like Burger King. Or things like, what the fuck was that, Burger King?
But people get into fights with their friends.
I mean, yeah. Look, the things we'll do for a free burger. I get it.
Things we'll do.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. It means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy, and I'm your host, Elia Connie. Jay is the woman in this dynamic who is currently co-parenting two young boys with her former partner, David.
David, he is a leader. He just don't want to leave me.
But how do you lead a woman? How do you lead in a relationship? Like, what's the blueprint?
David, you just asked the most important question. Listen to Family Therapy on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound. sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're going to love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.